As Toby said, this talk is my attempt at answering the top four questions that I get asked working for church. And it was hard to choose just four, because I get asked a lot of questions. But I hope that my answers give you some insight into what it's like on the other side. So I'm going to jump in with the first question. Who are you and what do you do? So I'm Meg, and contrary to word on the street, I'm not the CEO of Vine. I'm the administrator, and I'm also a lot of things apart from my job title. Plus, we all know who the real CEO is. I think the reason I often get called the CEO is because my role can be hard to define. It's a bit of this, a bit of that. Sometimes more this, less that, depending on the time of the year or the season our church is in, or even who makes up the rest of the staff team. But here's why I don't like being called the CEO. When I think about what that means, the chief executive officer, I can go to these two extremes. So either feeling really arrogant or really insecure. So there are times I've been puffed up by my knowledge and my responsibilities, and I start to look down on other people who I perceive to have lesser responsibilities or who don't work for the church building the kingdom. I also have a tendency to take on criticisms that aren't aimed at me or problems that aren't mine to solve. It's kind of this savior mentality that stops me from looking to my true savior and pointing others to him. Then on the other hand, I get insecure when I compare my job to those of the people in this room, so the artists, the business consultants, the entrepreneurs. And when I look at the mundane tasks that I do, they can seem so insignificant, and I can struggle to see how they're even remotely contributing to the life of the church, let alone bringing God glory. Being called the CEO makes me feel like an imposter, like I'm doing way less important stuff than people expect of me, which is to know everything that's going on, everything about everyone, everything that all the staff are thinking, and everything they should be thinking. The healthy midpoint between these two extremes, I think, is humility, where I can see the gifts that God's given me and use them in any small way that I can for his glory. What does it mean to bring him glory? I find this definition by John Piper helpful, that we glorify God by enjoying him, by being who he made us to be. In those times when I can't see a bigger purpose in what I do, I often need others to nudge me in the right direction. Let me give you an example. When Vine merged with St. Michael's, I took on the responsibility of managing the hall and the various dance groups who use it through the week. At every meeting with Toby, he'd keep asking me to check the hall a few times a week to make sure it was tidy. And every week it was such a low priority on my list that it got completely pushed off. I just didn't see what the point was of cleaning up other people's mess. I don't know if you guys would guess this about me, but I have this kind of tough love approach where it's like, just let the mess get really bad and then someone will work out that they should clean it up. But obviously not everyone thinks like that. So after a few months of Toby sounding like a broken record, out of total exasperation, he said, "The people who use our hall may not come across any other Christians except for us. We are the face of the church, of Christianity, of Jesus. And this is a great opportunity to show that we're not just here to make money from them, but to love them by creating a welcoming space for them and talking to them face to face as much as possible in a woman-friendly way." The second question, where's the fairy lights, the next weekend away, the container I left at church 5 months ago? Sometimes I just want to stick a sign in my forehead that says, "Go away, I don't work on weekends," that includes Sundays, at 11 p.m., at 7 a.m. via Facebook Messenger when I'm on the dance floor. Which brings me to the next question. What's it like to work for church, to live 5 minutes away in a house that's owned by the church, with people who go to that church, to be a part of that church family, and to serve there? I think the question they're really asking is why? Why would you do something like that? Why would you choose to live like that? It seems so intense, and sometimes it is. On the one hand, I think that's kind of how it was in the early church. When you read through Acts, you see people living as a family, sharing everything, serving one another all the time. It's a beautiful picture of God's gathered people, and I think it's a great privilege that I get to experience a similar way of living. But I also don't think that it's prescriptive. So it doesn't mean that I should just let my work expand until it takes up my whole life and I burn out. The answer to the why is I didn't choose the church life. The church life chose me. I ended up at Vine in a really roundabout way. I kind of fell into this job, and my current housemates poached me from my previous share house. I always say to people how God has provided for me so abundantly through this church over the last 7 years, and some of it's hard to explain, but I'm going to try for the short version. So 7 years ago, I got married, moved to the city, was working as a graphic designer, which from the outside looked like I was winning at life, but that really wasn't the reality. I felt isolated as I'd left behind my family, my church, and my friends, and faced struggle after struggle in my marriage. Then I started going to Vine, and mostly due to the efforts of Mike Jontek, I slowly became a part of the community. He persuaded me to join his community group. Yep, we went to New Zealand for our weekend away. He encouraged me to serve at Summerfest, where we ran kids programs and went door knocking, talking to people about Jesus for a week. And he even got me on stage at church to talk about it. I remember writing a prayer request for my husband on a response card one day, and hearing back from the staff that they were praying for me was just massive. I no longer felt like I was going through it alone. And then my husband even started coming along to church. At one point, he was really sold out for Jesus and the vision of Vine, and he wanted to get on board and serve. So Toby suggested he could volunteer with a few admin tasks, which is kind of hilarious considering his personality type. So I ended up doing it, and then Mike started hassling Toby to give me a proper job. This was right at the time when my design work was starting to dry up and we were struggling financially. When my marriage finally broke down and I was between houses for a few weeks, Toby and Liz invited me to stay with them, and they treated me like one of the family. When I felt crushed by a credit card debt that I shared with my now estranged husband, they offered to help me out. When I wanted to go back to uni to finish my degree, I was able to cut back half a day at work to make it fit with my timetable. When my housemates at the commune saw that I needed to find a place closer to work with more of a community focus, they asked me to move in, and I now get to live with 5 amazing adults and 2 kids. Just yesterday, I'd had one of those days when nothing seemed to go right. I hadn't slept well the night before, and I was worried about finishing this talk. But when I got home, I spent some time playing with Dexter and Walt, and my spirits just lifted. Living there also means I get to dig around in a generously sized garden, which is one of my great joys in life, and not something a lot of Surrey Hills houses have. The challenge of living this way, when everything is so interconnected, is not to feel trapped in my church bubble or become too insular. I've felt judged for working too much or too little, for not being able to respond to emails 24/7, for talking about work outside of work hours, and for asking someone to do something they think I should do because I get paid for it. There have been days where I felt anxiety rising in my chest as I walked to church, instead of being excited about the people that I'm about to meet as a welcomer, and the worship I'm about to participate in with God's family, and the word that I'm about to sit under in the preaching. I'll see a mistake on a slide I've made, and my thoughts immediately go to what other people must be thinking, and I can't concentrate on the sermon. It's difficult to come home and not be able to have a whinge to your housemates about your pastor, because he's your boss, and he's their friend as well. I've had to work out where the middle ground is between being honest about what's going on for me and respecting the rest of my workmates. While working for Vine, God has been teaching me to care more about what he thinks and less about what other people think, and to treat them with grace and patience. I've had to learn what it looks like to serve at church as just Meg, not Administrator Meg, to sometimes let things go so that others can be empowered to own them, and to care more about people on a Sunday and less about the process. If anyone needs help setting boundaries, I found this book, Boundaries by Townsend and Cloud, really helpful. Because my world is so small, it can become quite insular as well. I can fall into the trap of thinking that it's only the work I do at church that matters, so I've got it covered, and my nice life in Surrey Hills is comfortable and safe. But we are called to give our whole lives for Christ. I'm not great at getting out of my comfort zone and intentionally putting myself in places where I'll have more opportunities to share the gospel, but I'm making some progress. I've recently joined a fitness club where I'm starting to get to know the trainers a bit, and soon I'll be volunteering at Centennial Park on a bush tucker regeneration project. I'd love it if you guys could keep checking in with me about how I'm going with this. Question 4. Well, I'll go back one. What's it like working with Toby and the staff team. I was really intimidated by Toby when I first started my role. All I knew of him was what I'd seen from up the front, so someone who knows a lot about the Bible and laughs at his own jokes. I think he's far more honest now, even to the point of being self-deprecating. But in those early days, it was hard to see him as anything but perfect. As someone who's always grown up thinking I should be perfect, it felt like I had a lot of high expectations to live up to. Now I get to see more of who these guys really are and how much of a struggle it can be behind the scenes. I see the amount of time that Andy has to spend away from his family on multiple weeknights and most of Sunday. I see the way some people treat staff like their personal counselor who should be on call 24/7. I see the energy that Becky and Nate put into growing someone as a leader only for that person to choose their career over serving. The problem with working with people you consider family is that often we treat our own family worse than we would a stranger. I'll confess to have given my workmates the silent treatment or saying something out of anger, which I never would have done in another workplace. I think as Christians, we expect more of one another, and so we can get more disheartened when we see each other sinning. Just like in other workplaces, office politics or gossip can creep in if we're not careful. Mondays in the office can be tough for our team. Everyone except me has just had a full Sunday of work, and Sundays can often be brutal. There could be any number of issues with volunteers or equipment, or just having a long day that could include running Bread of Life from 7 a.m., running a kids program, preaching twice, reworking the sermon in between services, and then having deep conversations at the pub until late at night about theological and personal issues. One of the first things I do on a Monday is check the response cards from Sunday. And can I just say a massive thanks to everyone who writes words of encouragement and prayer requests. Just like back when I wrote on a card all those years ago, we still read those cards out every week in staff meeting. And we love sharing your joys and your struggles in prayer. And also thank you to those of you who have the guts to put your name on a card when you have something to criticize. It's the most frustrating thing to read a long-winded complaint that might only come down to a simple misunderstanding, but you can't do anything about it because you don't know who wrote it. If you actually want something to change, go and talk to that person or write them an email instead of grumbling about it to others. On a more positive note, one of the things I love about every member of our team is their willingness to engage with people in disagreement. There have been some great arguments within our team where both people are passionate about what they believe, but they're so humble and respectful. I hope I've given you a good glimpse into what it's like on the other side, and that you've maybe been struck by how we are just humans too. I still remember the Love You Bro Facebook post at the AGM a few years ago. Does anyone else remember that? For those who went there, Toby was talking about how something as simple as posting Love You Bro on his Facebook could mean so much. Like, it's not him over here and the rest of the church over there. And it was really cool to see the flood of messages that night on his wall. I'd love to encourage you guys to keep doing things like that off your own bat. Sometimes all we need to make our jobs easier is to know that you think we're part of this family too.